It's time for the Tom Sumner Program. The Tom Sumner Program is a live variety show with music, comedy, and special guest interviews every Monday through Friday. The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation. Our theme music is Fruit of the Louvre, provided by Flick composer-producer Howard Eddy. Stay tuned, because it's on now. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation. The Tom Sumner Program.
Hi, I'm U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow, and I'm listening to the Tom Sumner Show.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Tom Sumner. This particular Tuesday edition of the Tom Sumner Program, I think, is going to be, it seems sort of book day. And yesterday was kind of book day, too. But we're definitely going to be talking with several authors today. Coming up in the third half of our three-hour tour, we're going to talk with Tom Hogan, who's the author of three novels. He's from California. His most recent is The Empty Confessional, a crime novel about pedophilia and the Catholic Church. And then in the middle of our three-hour tour, the second hour, we're going to feature Stephanie Pearson, who is a travel writer and National Geographic contributor. She has just completed recently completed a brand new National Geographic 100 Great American Parks. So we're going to talk about parks and things to do now that we're, for all intents and purposes, in a post-pandemic recovery period. And if you don't find some place that you want to go in National Geographic's 100 Great American Parks, you could always go for a night walk along the river in Akawi, as featured in the books of my guest this hour, who is actually from Flint, Michigan. And we're going to talk about the fourth and final book in the Magical Teen Noir serial novel, inspired by the author's experiences growing up in and around Flint, Michigan, called Urbantasm. And this fourth installment is called The Spring Storm. It's by Connor Coyne. He joins me by phone. Connor, good morning and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
You know, I have to, I cheated a little bit. I went to the end of book four and caught your little sign-off about night walks and their impact on having decisions. But let's talk about Akawi. Akawi is a place, it's a city modeled very much after Flint, Michigan, your hometown and mine. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm wondering, there are landmarks from throughout Flint that show up in the Urbantasm books under different names. Did you have to change the names to protect the innocent?
I think it was a little bit of that at the beginning. I think I was a little bit sheepish about things being a little bit too recognizable, and I wanted to be able to talk freely about any subject that seemed relevant, and that greatly simplified when you've got sort of a dramatic license, when you aren't bound by fidelity to to history, which I think you are when you invoke things by their true names. But in the long haul, I found that it gave me flexibility to talk about things that wouldn't have been possible. So, for example, you know, the most dramatic example was, I lived through the water crisis here, as did so many of us, and I wanted to talk about that in the book. And the book, of course, you know, takes place in the mid-1990s. So if it was set in Flint, that would not have been possible. And yet, because it's a fictionalized setting, I could introduce a water crisis that closely resembled the Flint water crisis. It just happens to be in the mid-90s in this story. So it kind of gave me a chance to talk about even Flint-related things that I wouldn't have been able to if it was set sort of in the real world, so to speak.
Well, and I notice on the cover of the book, book four, The Spring Storm, Urbantasm, a novel, is a quote from another Flintian, New York Times bestselling author of What the Eyes Don't See, Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha, who really pulled back the veil on the whole Flint water crisis, and she calls it a magical epic. How important was it to have a pull quote from that particular best-selling author?
I mean, it really kind of brings things full circle. You know, for a few years, I was helping to run the Flint Literary Festival, or as it's been more recently called, the Flint Festival of Writers. And Dr. Mona was actually one of our speakers in the second year of that event because of What the Eyes Don't See. I think Dr. Mona is a very, very special example of she's a public figure. In a certain sense, she's a political figure, not that she's partisan, but that, you know, the views she has expressed have had an effect on policy, not just in Flint, but around the country. And, you know, she's a literary person. She reads books. She loves books. And so I remember it was like maybe 6-8 months ago, I reached out and I said, hey, would you like me to send you a review copy? And I wasn't really even, I guess I thought she'd reply, but I wasn't expecting her to take me up on it simply because I know how busy her schedule is, but she did, and she evidently enjoyed it, because. But for me to be able to close with that pull quote from her, it just really felt appropriate to kind of bringing the story full circle.
What? The choice to base the story in Flint, mm-hmm. albeit masked, was that a matter of convenience because they say write what you know, or was there something about Flint that became a character in this novel?
Well, I think the two are kind of bound together. I think authenticity in writing is kind of a hard thing to like nail down, and a lot of times from a reader's perspective, it's almost an intuitive, you know it if you see it sort of thing. You can, I think, tell sometimes if people are writing from experiences that they are just unfamiliar with. But a lot of the inspiration for this book, for me, came down to a very specific point in time in the mid-1990s, when, you know, a lot of my friends and I think were sort of forming the identities that, you know, would stick with us into adulthood, and were grappling with real crises, with, you know, situations that had implications of life and death and career and, you know, kind of our hopes for the future, and the way we were kind of trying to reconcile the traumas of the past. And so it was, for me, in that moment, I sort of realized not only could I write what I knew about, but what I knew about was actually interesting and compelling and could speak to a larger audience. And that kind of extends to Flint. In a lot of ways, Flint's kind of an extraordinary place, and history is alive here. And so, you know, you could do a lot worse for having a place that you're familiar with to write about. And that did kind of, you know, give this story enough of an oomph when I started working on it to kind of carry it forward until it was done.
Now, this is being called a teen noir serial novel.
Mm-hmm.
It's in four parts. They are, in fact, sequential. And it and they're 400 plus, between 400 and 500 pages each. It's not unusual to break up a novel for size.
Yeah.
But would you have to adopt a Russian name if you had printed these all as one book?
You know, I checked it out, and it's longer than a couple of those Russian novels, but it's shorter than others. It turns out the novel that a lot of people are familiar with that's longer than all four books put together is Atlas Shrugged, which is I think like 50,000 words longer than all four of my books put together. But yeah, you know, splitting it up into four was kind of a matter of necessity. Initially, I was trying to find a traditional publisher, and they in general do not publish books, especially by new coming authors of that length. And then when I kind of went, you know, a self-published hybrid publish route, it turns out that printers are also not equipped to print things of that length. So I had to make them this short, simply so I could get them printed.
Well, I think short may be a little bit of a misnomer, because even broken into four parts, Connor, and no offense intended, but they're still pretty lengthy. I mean, they're pretty beefy books, even in the four segments. Did you know that the story was going to take on this kind of depth and length when you started book one, The Dying City?
I didn't know for a fact, but I certainly hoped it did. I'm a big fan of what you, I guess you could call maximalist literature. some of my favorite American authors are William Faulkner and Toni Morrison. And I guess Toni Morrison's not known for writing extraordinarily long books, but they're extraordinarily dense and detailed books. That's kind of a little bit of a cross current to what we think of as like the mainstream literary tradition from the United States. If you ask people to like rattle off like, you know, two or three names, I mean, maybe Faulkner would be pinned at the end of that, but most people are going to mention Hemingway and Fitzgerald, both writers who really prize narrative economy. You get to the point, you get in, you tell the story, you get out of the way. And there's a lot that's you know, there's a lot of discipline involved in that, and it has a lot to recommend it. But I really like a book that has time to kind of stretch out and explore the nooks and crannies. And it just isn't, you know, one thing I always would kind of argue about sometimes with other writers is, you know, if you're enjoying a story, what's the rush to get it over with? You know, if this is something you're doing for your own education or for your own entertainment, then, you know, really like just let it take as long as it needs. So yeah, I wasn't too surprised that these turned out being really long, but hopefully that was in the service of covering a lot of ground.
You know, it's funny you say that. If you're enjoying it, why cut it off? I had someone suggest to me once that I should do shorter interviews because they were listening to an interview on my show one time, as many years ago, and they got to work and they didn't want to get out of the car because they didn't want to stop listening to the interview. And that was their rationale for doing shorter interviews. I thought, if you're enjoying it, why am I going to stop? Anyway, I completely get that. And speaking of long format interviews, I have a break coming up here in just a minute or so. Connor, can you stick around for a few minutes and we'll talk some more?
Absolutely.
Because I want to talk to you about the timeline of these four books and how long it took on the pages and off the pages when we come back with Flint-based author Connor Coyne. talking about the fourth and final book in his Urban Tasm series, this one called The Spring Storm. If you're listening to us on WFOV, Our Voices Radio, 92.1 FM Flint, they are a broadcast service of the Flint Odyssey House, Spectacle Productions, and my good friend Paul Herring. We're going to let them squeeze a few words in or do whatever they do when we go to break. If you're streaming us at TomSumnerProgram.com, we have some messages as well. And then we'll come back with more of our conversation with author Connor Coyne when we return. So don't touch that dial. Don't click that mouse. We'll be right back.
Hello out there, everybody. It's me, Tigger. T-I-double-G-R. That spells Tigger. And don't forget to remember to listen to Tom Sumner Program on account of because he's so bouncy.
I'm Julie Lopez with Crime Stoppers. Have you ever wondered what to do if you have information about a crime or the whereabouts of a felony fugitive and you want the police to know but you need to remain anonymous? Well, here's what you can do. You can go to p3tips.com or download the mobile app. You can go to Crime Stoppers of Flint and Genesee County's Facebook page and click on the Leave an Anonymous Tip tab, or you can call 1-800-422-JAIL. All methods are anonymous, and if your help leads to a felony arrest, you may be eligible for a cash reward. Remember, your voice matters.
Our lives have been turned upside down by COVID-19. When a vaccine becomes available, it's critical that all of us get it. What we do as individuals will impact everyone's health, including those who can't get the vaccine. We won't get through this unless everyone takes part. Now is the time to get up to date on all recommended vaccines for both kids and adults. Experts say it's more important than ever for everyone to get their flu vaccine this year. And if you're older, you should get both the flu and pneumonia vaccines, since both illnesses can make COVID-19 even worse. Vaccines are available at a lot of convenient places, so be an example for friends and loved ones and encourage them to get vaccinated too. We all want to reunite, travel, and get back to school and work, but that means we all need to get on board. This is the time to do what's right for each other. Get vaccinated. It's our best shot.
Hey, this is Tom from the Tom Sumner Program. Catch me and a gaggle of great guests weekdays on Our Voices Radio, WFOVLP 92.1 FM. You never know who might drop by.
Joe Biden from the Blue Hawaiian.
Dan Serling.
Congressman Dan Kildee.
Alexander Zonjic.
Actor, comedian Jonah Pody.
Woodrow Stanley.
U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow.
State Senator Jim Ananick.
Comedian Brian McCree.
The unknown comic.
Mark Farner.
And Tom, I want you to know Tom's my friend.
You've always got great questions, and you know the material, and you care about it, and that's impressive.
Nice to be with you, Tom. And I admire you for reading all of that. I haven't read the whole thing. I've got willing to admit that.
Hey, Tom, this is my favorite interview always. You it's like having coffee at the kitchen table with you.
Tune in Monday through Friday from 9 to 12 right here on 92.1 of a Kind, and check out our website at TomSumnerProgram.com.
Discoveries. They happen when we least expect them, in places we thought we knew. And discoveries have a way of teaching us a little more about ourselves along the way. Welcome to Flint and Genesee County, where up north meets down south. Home to Michigan's largest county park system and a vibrant culture. A place filled with discoveries we've yet to make, throughout acres of beautiful lakes, wetlands, and woods, and in the diverse city beyond. Where the uplifting melodies of gospel choirs fill the air, where the work of renowned artists color the galleries and museums, where the fresh fruits and vegetables at the downtown farmers market awaken our senses, and where the cultural center and planetarium broaden our view of the world. Let's spend a few days enjoying the wonders of Flint and Genesee County, where the joy of discovery is pure Michigan. Your trip begins at Michigan.org.
Babies come with lots of decisions.
Cloth or disposable? Crib or bassinet?
So when it comes to protection, go with the safest, most effective choice, vaccination. Get all the recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2 to protect your child against 14 serious childhood diseases. For more reasons to vaccinate, talk to your child's doctor. Go to cdc.gov/vaccines or call 800-CDC-INFO. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
This is Congressman Dan Kildee, and you're listening to the Tom Sumner Program.
And welcome back, everybody, as we continue our conversation with Flint-based author Connor Coyne. Connor, welcome back. Thanks for sticking around. Sorry to make you sit through all that.
Oh, no problem. It was a chance to sip some coffee.
Excellent. Carl Reiner said he used his time during the break to go to the bathroom. But I want to ask, you said that the book takes place, or at least started, in the mid-90s. And I just wonder what the timeline of the book is, and how long did it take you to write in real life?
So what I think you'd call like the main action of the book takes place between the years 1993 and 1996, almost that entire period. And I started basically creating a draft, an outline and then a draft in 1996. I'd been kind of tinkering around with some story ideas for a bit before then. And I did probably, you know, one of the worst things for my career possible at that point, which was I finished the draft. And, when you're just sort of dabbling in a project, you can always, like, say, okay, you know, this isn't quite floating my boat, I'm going to go work on something else. But once you finish the draft, at least for me, I feel like I have to finish the project. And once I had a draft, you know, this would have been by like mid-1997, so I would have been 18 at the time. You want to see the project through, you know, and so I knew it was possible, and if I just worked long enough and hard enough on it, I'd be able to finish it. And so from then it was just constantly revising and building it out and getting it edited and you know, kind of troubleshooting.
How long was the draft, Connor?
It was a bit shorter than it is now. The length of the story has actually fluctuated quite a bit. I had I worked with two great editors, Hosanna Patience and Kelsey Ronan, who herself just has a great Flint novel out in the last couple months. And Kelsey was great because she and the best editors are able to do this. She was able to say in a very gentle way, Connor, this is great and your heart's in it and I understand why you're putting all of this in here, but you got to cut a bunch of this. And so actually, if it hadn't been for her keen editing, the final version might have been even longer. The rough draft was maybe like, I'd say, 80% as long as it is now.
All four volumes?
Well, at that time, it was just one big, long thing called Urbantasm, and I never printed it out. I mean, we had an IBM 286 and a dot matrix printer. I think it would have caused both machines to explode if I had printed it out. So I guess we'll never really know for sure, because at the time, you know, I could estimate page count, but you didn't really have word count functions on those early word processors. It was just a really, really, it was just some really huge files.
But it was all one story, and then you began the process of dividing it up into the four segments we know today.
Yeah, I didn't start dividing it up really until 2014, because that was when I started querying agents who, you know, would theoretically help me find a publisher. And I knew at that point that, you know, a gigantic one volume book of this story was a non-starter. So the book, you know, the entire Urbantasm saga is divided into eight parts, which I call eight revolutions. It was very convenient to divide it into four separate books with two of these revolutions apiece, and then each of them was somewhat more manageable lengthwise.
And then that search for an agent and then ultimately a publisher, how did that end up with your books being published by Gothic Funk Press, which I think is your own brand, isn't it?
It is, yes. So, so basically, I in 2014 was very hopeful and started querying agents. And a lot of them asked me for manuscripts, which was, you know, which is always an encouraging sign. It means that the premise is exciting and timely. So I sent those out and, you know, got a lot of like polite rejections, which is, you know, also kind of in the course of things. But I basically, you know, this is kind of like, it kind of like straddles a line genre-wise between young adult fiction and adult literary fiction. And the number of publishers and the number of literary agents in basically the U.S. And Canada and the U.K. that deal in that genre is very limited. So I kind of came to a point where I found I had burned through everybody, you know, that everybody, every professional that was looking at books of this nature. And at that point, I hired sort of a literary consultant to you know, advise me on how to do a round two. And they said the only way I could really shop it around with a chance of getting it picked up was to make the first book completely standalone. So in other words, you finish book one, it's got a satisfying ending, it's not linked to the other books in only a very cursory way. And at this point, I've been working on this for 22 years. It would have completely, like, gutted the premise of the story, which is kind of like this building mystery. So I said, screw that. And I kind of was, like, really at my wit's end for a while there. But a friend of mine grew up on the east side of Flint and, you know, subsequently moved to Silicon Valley and, you know, did a lot of programming. We met, and he said, like, what would it take financially for you to publish this under Gothic Funk Press, which I had used to kind of publish my own work in the past and also to do sort of community engagement events and literary events around Flint. And so I looked up a number, and I mean, I thought it was unrealistic because there were four books in the series. It wasn't going to be cheap. We were going to have to market and promote it. We had to edit it and proofread it. We had to get cover design, the works. But you know, he believed in the project, and so he signed off on it. And, you know, then we were off to the races, so to speak.
Now, with the this fourth, well, let me ask this first.
Mm-hmm.
Who came up with the phrase magical teen noir serial novel?
Well, it's kind of, and I wish it was a little bit less wordy than it is, but it's kind of a mashup of several different distinct concepts. So magical, it basically, it's magical realism. It's, you know, Toni Morrison does American magical realism. You know, other names I think of course, you know, there are a lot of, like, great Latin American writers, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Isabel Allende, in the UK, you've got China Mieville, but basically stories where they're essentially realistic stories, but extraordinary or magical things happen inexplicably and are treated as normal. So that is, you know, that is an accurate description of Urbantasm. And then it also participates in another genre called teen noir. And teen noir would basically be exactly what it sounds like, you know, imagine Dashiell Hammett, or, you know, those wonderful books by James Cain, except instead of like happening, you know, on the foggy streets of San Francisco or something, it's happening in a high school classroom. You know, you've got, like, you know, cynical kids solving mysteries, delving into, like, existential crises and, you know, lots of action. And with teen noir, most people probably know it through television. For example, the show Veronica Mars, was a very well-known teen noir, but, you know, there's also some fiction that treats in that. I'm thinking a lot of the writing of Megan Abbott is teen noir. And then finally, serial novel is hopefully just a way to flag to readers that, you know, these books are linked together. If you read them out of order, it's going to be very confusing.
That was another question I had, that because it's a serial novel, it is sequential, and you really should start with book one and follow it in order.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it would be an interesting exercise to pick up one of the other books and see how much you could figure out. But to really understand the story, you need to start at book one and follow it through in order.
When did book four drop, or does it drop?
It was officially published on May 1st, and there's a print version and an electronic. So,
is there an audio book?
There's not an audio book, and unfortunately, now we're kind of at the end of the budget, which kind of breaks my heart because several people have contacted me asking about an audio book. And I think if the book gets popular again in the future, you know, then maybe we'll be able to move on that. Right now, of course, for an audio book, you need to both hire the reader and get the studio space or set up, and you know, there's a lot involved in it. But I would love for there to be an audio book of Urban's Hasm at some point.
Did you have a launch yet?
We had a digital launch, which Janworth Nelson hosted. That was just last Thursday. But this Thursday, we're doing an in-person launch at 27th Word Books in Detroit. That starts, I believe, at I'm gonna forget the time, but I think it's like 8:00. And then we'll also be at Comma Book during the June Art Walk. So that's going to be on June 10th.
Well, this has been a difficult time for authors to get out and do launches and to do readings and book signings and personal appearances because of the pandemic, because of the quarantines and lockdowns.
Yeah.
How do these launches go? Digitally and in person, how important are they to getting a book out there and getting it in front of people?
For me, so much of this is psychological. Like, you know, unless you really strike gold, few of the writers I know, it's their primary income. So when you release a project into the world, I'm talking about it like it's a dolphin that you're setting free or something, but when you release a project into the world, I think it's at least symbolically very important to mark that moment. And that can happen digitally, like that can happen, you know, outside, you know, you can mark that moment however you like. I think for the third book, we did a scavenger hunt, which Comma Books actually helped facilitate that as well. But I think to be able to say, hey, this is done, I've worked really hard on it, and now you can read it and experience these words, I think for any writer that I've known, that act of completion is symbolically very, very important. Now, I know that on the business side of things, launches are also important to drive traffic and sell books. And to be sure they are, like, I kind of felt a pinch when I knew for more than 2 years that sort of an event was off the table. But I honestly think the most important thing is for readers to have the book, and the best advertising you're ever going to have for a book is word of mouth. Like, nothing that I've seen in the entire, like, you know, 4,000 years history of writing has ever beaten, you know, somebody saying, hey, this is really great, you've got to read this. And so for me, like the business concerns, like you can get around that just by being creative, saying, how do I get this book into people's hands? How do I get them to read it, review it, share it with other people? That's the question you need to answer. And if it's not going to be a launch, then, you know, you find some other way to do it. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, for me, the launches have been more sort of symbolically important. But for the business side of things, I at least feel like there are other roads available.
I remember David Baldacci, who writes mystery thrillers, was talking about being at a book event in Washington, D.C. with a couple of other writers. And then President Barack Obama walks into the bookstore with his two daughters. And the manager of the bookstore, you know, runs right over to him. Hi, Mr. President. Welcome to our store. And he's walking him around, you know, sort of giving him a tour of the facility. And he stops and says, Mr. President, this is David Baldacci. And Barack Obama looked at him and said, wow, you're famous. And Baldacci said it was so surreal to be looking at Barack Obama and have him call him famous. And it was really funny. He told the story in an interview I did with him a few years ago. And there's a picture. There's a picture from that moment on his website. Anyway, I just thought that was such a funny story about a book event. What are some highlights from book events that you've done?
So during the first year that book one was out, we put together a national book tour, which I didn't think I'd ever get to do, because truthfully, you know, there are a lot of small press authors who generally, if you're going on any sort of a tour, you're paying for it out of pocket. And for the most part, I can't afford that either. But we did get to go to some places, and every place that I went, you know, I went to Syracuse, New York, and I went to San Francisco, California, and everywhere I went, I got to see people that I hadn't connected with in decades. So, you know, you do the book event, usually it's at a coffee shop or a bar, so, you know, you're imbibing whatever is appropriate in that setting, and everybody is getting like really caffeinated and excited, and then the event's over, but people don't go home. You hang out, you talk, you know, you go for a walk around the city. You get caught up on all those things that happen in life, and I think for me, being able to visit those places and see those people, you know, so much of our lives are lived online these days. There's something about seeing the town where a friend lives and seeing them in person and talking to them for the first time since college or high school or something. You know, it was not book related in that moment, but it was just a true pleasure to get to spend a year reconnecting with old friends and visiting them. And, you know, I don't know, I guess, how critical it was for the book, but as an author, being able to share my work in that way and to make those connections beyond the work, you know, I'll remember that for the rest of my life. That was extraordinary.
You know, Connor, for a lot of writers, it's a very solitary thing. Do you enjoy that kind of interaction, going to book events and getting feedback, especially from people who've maybe read the book or previous volumes already?
I do. You know, lots of times the logistics and setting it up are stressful. You know, even something this morning, like I think this is the fourth time we've talked, but I'm always like, what if my phone explodes? What if my hair catches it? What if I really have to go to the bathroom and time's asking me a question? You know, that could be awkward. You know, so there are always like a million little logistical details that you worry about, and that can be stressful. But for me, at least, once I'm in the moment, once I'm talking to somebody, and I'm sharing something I care about, and hopefully they're there because they want to hear about it, that's like where all of those moments of solitary work pay off, because, you know, you're not just doing this for your own pleasure. You're creating this, hopefully, so that it can be shared. And so to me, like, you know, the most exciting moment isn't when I finish writing something. It's when I hear from somebody who has read what I've written, and these events are a great opportunity to do that.
Well, I have to say this book is a tremendous undertaking, and kudos for getting through all four volumes. You know, by today's, electronic book and today's standards in terms of the length of publishing, each one of these four parts could be a trilogy. But With this under your belt, and of course you've written Hungry Rats, Shattering Glass, mm-hmm. and the short story collection Atlas, and now this healthy tome is complete. Are you able to write full time?
No, but I have sort of an arrangement in my family where I can write every day. Basically, my wife is the primary breadwinner. She's sort of a web data or medical data consultant, and I do most of the chores and the housework, and I do other things like I do a lot of web writing for Mott College, and also run the Teen Writers Workshop at the Flint Public Library. But the nice thing about sort of like this patchwork of odd jobs and things that I do is that there's time left over that I can carve out every day for writing. And being able to establish a routine and stick to it, that's something which, a lot of writers, if you're working, two part-time jobs or something, it's really, really hard to know reliably, I'll be able to write from, 9 to 11 tomorrow morning or whatever it is. So, not writing full-time, but writing every day, and that's a pretty good setup.
Well, Connor, thank you so much for spending this time with me this morning and talking about the new book and really the whole series. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and I always enjoy when we run into each other occasionally, although that hasn't been as often the last couple of years, which is true for everybody about everything, I think.
Yeah.
I guess all I can really say is keep up the good work, and I wonder what's next, Connor. What's your next big project, and where can people find out more about you and your work, past, present, and future?
Well, you can go to ConnorCoyne.com. That's sort of a catch-all for my stuff. If you go to urbanchasm.com, there's more on this project. As for the future, I bought myself a concertina, and I'm playing it very badly so far, tormenting the neighbors. But I don't know. I'll probably write something soon, but I don't know. I don't know what yet. I'm kind of letting this rest for a little bit before I dive into the next thing.
Really? You're going to take a break from writing and start a Zydeco band?
maybe a short break. I don't know that I've got much future in Zydeco. I've actually got a short Sword and Sorcery novella, which is totally different from this. It's complete pulp. Sword fights and stuff, but I might shop that around just to see if there's any interest. But I don't know what the next big thing is or if there's a next big thing. We'll just have to play that by ear.
Well, Connor, thanks, and as always, it's a pleasure talking with you, and as I said before, keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye. That was Connor Coyne. He is, he lives in Flint, Michigan, and works here. He is an author of Hungry Rats, Shattering Glass, and Atlas, and now the completed four-book series, Urbantasm, with the fourth installment, The Spring Storm.
Hi, this is Joe By from the Blue Lions, and you're listening to the Tom Sumner Program.
Right now, the COVID-19 vaccines are available to millions of Americans, and soon, they will be available to everyone.
This vaccine means hope. It will protect you and those you love from this dangerous and deadly disease.
I want to go back to work, and I want to be able to move around.
To visit with Michelle's mom, to hug her and see her on her birthday.
You know what I'm really looking forward to is going to opening day in Texas Ranger Stadium with a full stadium.
We've lost enough people and we've suffered enough damage.
In order to get rid of this pandemic, it's important for our fellow citizens to get vaccinated.
I'm getting vaccinated because we want this pandemic to end as soon as possible.
So we urge you to get vaccinated when it's available to you.
So roll up your sleeve and do your part.
This is our shot.
Now it's up to you.
Yo, speaking. Oh, dear. Honey, our car warranty is expiring again.
So soon? It just expired last week.
You don't even own a car!
Not now, Dana. Your father's on the phone.
Hey!
Mom and Dad, you're being scammed.
It's a robocall. Scammers are using new technology and clever tactics to make more and more calls that look legitimate, but are hard to trace. They can make it look like they're calling from any number, even from numbers of people you know. My robocall crackdown team is working with state and federal partners to stop the robocalls for good, but I need your guys' help. Don't trust your caller ID. Verify you're really talking to the person whose number appears when your phone rings. And if you accidentally answer a robocall, hang up right away. Engaging in conversation will only lead to more calls. Use a call blocking app on your cell phone that stops robocalls before they interrupt your day. And if you do get a robocall, file a complaint with my office online at mi.gov/robocalls. And Mom, Dad, please do not give your information out to these scammers over the phone. They're just trying to trick you.
Well, at least they call. No, I get it. You're busy. But you know Janine's daughter is a doctor. She calls every week. A doctor.
I'm Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel. Visit mi.gov/agcomplaints for your connection to consumer protection.
It's 2022, and this year the Tom Sumner Program begins its 15th year. It would not be here without support through the years from individuals and organizations like these. Seth David Radwell,
East Village Magazine,
Flint Institute of Music.
Hello, I'm Maestro Rickety Mac.
Flint Community Schools.
MTA Flint.
Flint Comics and Entertainment.
Hamity Complete Food Center.
The Flint River Watershed Coalition.
W.H. Weiscarver.
The Genesee County Road Commission.
Lone Museum Auto Fair.
Thomas Appliance.
The Genesee Health Plan.
Cliff Blood Technology.
Mark Community College.
It's Pure Michigan.
Friends on Facebook have also helped by contributing to the show's online fundraisers two or three times a year. If you would like to help the Tom Sumner Program continue to thrive by becoming a sponsor, send an email of interest to tom@tomsumnerprogram.com. Add your name to the list of supporters, past, present, and future.
Technical assistance for the Tom Sumner Program is provided by Swiftlet Technology, engineering and IT services at swiftlet.technology.
Hey, this is First Ward City Councilman Eric Mays, and you're listening to the Tom Sumner Program.
Welcome to this presentation of the Comedy Spotlight on the Tom Sumner Program.
In the past few years, a type of meeting place has grown up throughout the country, which is called a coffee house. There are many uninitiated people who have never been into a coffee house, I being one of them. We're seated now at a table across from which is a man who seems rather depressed. Sir, you are depressed. Would it be getting too personal to ask you why?
I'm not pretty.
You are depressed because you feel you're not attractive.
I'm not attractive.
You're not good-looking.
No, I'm not.
Well, what would you say,
That's
sir?
That's why I'm mainly depressed.
Well, may I say something to you, sir?
Yes.
You are a very attractive person. You're as attractive as 9 out of 15 people I know.
You're very kind.
But you are. You're not an unattractive person.
You're very sweet, but I know that the truth, and I face it every
morning.
You're
a good-looking man, sir.
I'm not a man. I'm a woman.
Oh, I see. Oh, I beg your pardon. We'll go over to one of the other tables now and see if we can speak.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much, sir. Madam. There's a gentleman sitting here wearing a pair of Levi's, a nicely laundered T-shirt, looking very much like an actor. I might describe him as looking like a cross between Marlon Brando and Joanne Woodward. I want to explain that. You do have blonde hair. May we sit and talk with you, sir?
If you are so in your mind, too.
Yes. Was I right, sir? Was I right? Are you an actor?
Yes, I happen to be a lesbian.
I think, sir. I think you... Can I check you on that? I think it's... you mean thespian.
Well, is that what...
Thespian. Thespian, actually.
Thespian.
Yes, yes.
I'll never get that wrong again.
Sir, who is your... Who do you consider the greatest actor we have in America today?
The greatest actor in America is Tallulah Bankhead. I think she's...
Well, she's a great actress.
Yeah, I don't mean an actress. I mean that she knows what she's doing up there, you know?
Well, who else do you like? Who would you pattern yourself after?
I would pattern myself after... I love that picture, The Fugitive Kind. I loved it very much. Very much. So
you're trying to...
I tried to be like Brando with my T-shirt and just look very much like Joanne Woodward, who I love very much. I love her.
Well, you know, usually when people...
I also look a little like the producer. I love him, too.
Marty Giroux.
Exactly. Marty Giroux. He produced that picture. You'll notice my shoes are exactly like his. I love that picture that much.
Well, sir,
that I became everything in it.
I see. Sir, I think I made a mistake. You're not an actor.
No, I'm not an actor, but I love to hang out here.
Okay. Well, it was a pleasure speaking.
Well, it was a pleasure almost to be an actor.
Well, I've got to wend my way through the crowd.
Oh, good luck on your wending. And goodbye.
If I can do anything for you, you just call upon me, sir.
Can I talk to you now?
No.
Okay. I understand. You have to go to other people on the record. I know that. I know that.
All right.
I watched you before in the coffee house.
All right, ladies.
Goodbye.
So long.
I hope I'm an actor.
We're going into a corner of the coffee house now. On the walls surrounding this table are many, many paintings. There's a gentleman sitting here with a palette knife, some brushes, some oils, and I imagine that he is the gentleman who painted these paintings. Am I right, sir?
That is correct in your assumption.
And the painting...
You are totally correct.
The painting...
And impeccably dressed, if I may say so.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
A lovely tie.
Thank you.
Gradually blending into the color of your suit.
You are always interested in color and design.
Color is my life. I am color.
Your name is... what is your name, sir?
Corinne Corfu.
Corinne Corfu, you are Greek.
I hope I am Greek. I would like to be Greek very much.
Well, that is a Greek name, and you have a Greek accent.
Yes. Well, then perhaps I am.
Well, don't you know your derivation?
No, I do not know my derivation. Gypsies stole me as a child. A band of gypsies.
And you were brought up where?
I was brought up in the Persian Gulf, right here in Miami. It's the Persian Gulf. No, it's a gypsy tea house. The rest of it's called the Persian Gulf.
I would like to talk to you about your paintings. Now,
yes, you certainly may. It's my life. Color and art. I love art.
They are very unusual. I noticed that...
God bless you for your perceptions.
I noticed one... You also... you sculpt, too, I noticed.
Sculpting and painting, all the arts.
There is a metallic sculpture there that is very interesting.
Yes, metallic.
What do you call that? It's just a series of wires in a grid-like effect.
What you mean above the door?
Yes, what do you call
that? Yes, that's called the air conditioning.
Yes. No, I'm sorry, sir.
I did not make that.
No.
The Fetters company made, but it's very beautiful.
Yes, your paintings are very abstract, I notice.
Yes, but they don't blow air out. So, the machines.
No. May I ask you about some of the paintings?
Yes, you certainly may.
That painting there that is entitled The Gull on a Hot Rock.
Yes.
Now, I don't see anything on that but a bunch of little specks.
Yes, well, I saw the gull on a hot rock from over 5 miles away.
I see.
I was standing on a cliff. That's why I painted in the perspective, the three little dots.
Now, getting closer, sir, may I examine a little more closely?
Certainly, not too close.
Yes. Now, that is not paint, those dots. They look like... Those are flies.
Yes, they are. They're flies.
But you didn't paint that. Those are real flies.
No, I took them, caught them in my hand until the air was out of their bodies and they died. And then I...
You pasted them onto
them? Put little dots of blue and put them on the dots. And they represent the gull and the rocks. I had to kill them. If I had not killed them, if they were not dead, and glued to my picture. Then I have no picture. Fly away, I got nothing, Charlie.
I see.
I'm in the dark.
Well, I excuse you.
What are you going to buy?
Well, sir, may I ask you about this particular abstract?
Yes, they're mainly impressionistic, post-impressionistic, yes. Pre-impressionistic, and impressionistic.
Yes, this one is more of an academician type of painting.
No, it's not.
Well, for instance, it's very graphic, it's very graphic.
Yes, it's very graphic. It's very graphic.
It's a draftsman-like quality. The spaghetti looks like spaghetti. The limp salad looks like limp salad. And the garlic bread looks like garlic bread.
Oh, no. That's not a picture. That's my supper. It happens to be resting on a frame and in my easel.
Oh.
That's my dinner. I eat that.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. Sir. It looks...
Do you like... Wait a minute. Do you really like it?
Well, it is.
Do you think it looks like
the composition
a
is
collage
rather...
of a...
Yes, I thought it was thickly painted.
I tell you what. If you really like it, I can lacquer it up and give it to you for $40.
No, I'm afraid I wouldn't want to take your deprive you of your supper, sir.
How about just a coffee and cake? Maybe not for $20.
No, sir.
Give me $1.50 for the coffee.
Sir, I'm really not interested.
Give me 40 cents. You can have it.
All right, here's 40 cents, sir.
All right.
Thank you
very
much.
Coffee and cake. Nice working with you.
Yes.
I hope you come in again.
I will, sir.
God bless your thigh.
I don't want the coffee.
Oh, you want the picture with the flies?
No, you just keep.
Give me a dime. You can have it. I kill more flies. What the hell is it?
All right.
Goodbye.
In a corner of the coffee house, there's a gentleman sitting with a very, very strange instrument on his lap. Sir, may we speak with you?
Hello.
What is your name, sir? May we get your name?
My name is Charlie Grape.
Charlie Grape?
Yes.
Do you perform here at the coffee house?
Yes, on occasion I do, and then they kind of get mad at me, and then I don't.
I think I can get permission for you to play for us. I'd like to...
Can you?
Yes. I would...
It's the first time I've ever gotten permission here. Just kind of...
We'd certainly like to hear a sample of your music.
Certainly. Let me just get tuned up. I'm trying to find an A here. There it is. Got it first shot out of the box. My A.
Now, what are you going to play for us?
22 Men.
All right, for the record, 22 Men.
22 Men, here we go.
Sung by Charlie Grape.
Here we are. I get mainly A out of it. You don't get more than A out of it. 22 men fell down and hurt their knees. 22 men fell down and hurt their knees. 22 men fell down, down to the ground. 22 men fell down and hurt their knees. Would you like to hear the release?
Do you have one?
Yeah. Now, 22 men fell down and hurt their...
That's not a release, sir. That's the same as the...
Yeah.
Bridge.
Okay. Okay, how about another completely different song and a new tune?
Yes, I'd like...
Okay.
Can you make it up on the spot?
I certainly can. It's my best part.
This is extemporaneous.
Yeah, whatever. 22 German soldiers hurt their knees. 22 German... So I think
sir,
you know
sir,
that
sir,
tune,
it,
yeah.
It is very similar to the other one.
Yeah, well,
how does it differ?
It differs in the fact that the first 22 men were not German soldiers.
Well, is this
the second 22 men are German soldiers?
Well,
it's the
can you play...
It's the same that they hurt their knee. That's right. You caught me there.
Yeah. Can you sing something completely different?
Okay.
Completely different. You know, the Calypso balladeers make up songs right on the spot, topical songs.
Yes, they
can
do.
Can you do that?
I'll try to. Okay. Okay. 22 Calypso men.
Is that
what you meant?
No, I meant something topical.
Something topical?
Yes.
I'll try something topical. Let's see what's happening in the world today here in our great nation. Got it. Big Dick Nixon hurt his knee. Big Dick Nixon hurt his knee.
This was another Comedy Spotlight on the Tom Sumner Program.
From the Tom Sumner Show. pilots, get off of my lawn. We're trying to do a radio show down here. It's a Tom Sumner program, don't you know? Go on. Go on, get out of here.